Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. There's a new odd couple on Netflix's Patrol, Tony Danza and Josh Groban. They co-star in The Good Cop, executive produced by Monk creator Andy Breckman. And Mr. B joins me next in Internet Radio Exclusive. FX led its latest original series loose last night, and critics are calling Mr. In Between a Best of 2018 contender. Scott Ryan stars as an every person who doubles as a criminal for hire. We'll explore this presentation from Down Under later this hour from Down Under with executive producer and director Nash Edgerton. Also ahead, Toronto, here CBS comes, our classic trivia question of the week, and a checkup on a very important crowdfunding campaign called Keep It Colorful. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Delighted to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon for the program All About Television. It's 79 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Bright, sunny, and wonderful, and we have two back-to-back exclusive interviews for you over the next hour. So stay with us and get involved. How do you get involved? You pick up the phone and make the call to 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere, your patrons across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. If you're not so fond of the phone, no problem with us, because we got a chat room for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. And Andy Breckman from The Good Cop will join me live here in the Big Apple after these news notes. CBS Television Studios unit is setting up a new production complex in Toronto for some of its series. When open and operating next summer, the facility will have 6 sound stages and occupy more than 260,000 square feet. That's 260,000 square feet. At the moment, CBS is filming season 2 of Star Trek Discovery in Toronto for CBS All Access, along with the CW's reboot of Charmed, that's premiering next month, and In the Dark, coming to that network early 2019. And TNT is set to produce The Angel of Darkness, a miniseries sequel to The Alienist, the Caleb Cobb novel that was made into a miniseries this past winter and picked up 4 Emmy nominations, including Best Limited Series. Former House of Cards producer Frank Pugliese will captain the effort, and Alienist key co-stars Daniel Brohl, Dakota Fanning, and Luke Evans are back. Filming is anticipated to begin by the end of the year. And that is news notes for today. In 2002, our first guest created what turned out to be one of the most beloved detective series in television history, called Monk. It ran for 8 seasons on USA, and it was so beloved that in its final episode in 2009, it set a record for basic cable drama episodes, more than 9 million viewers, a record that has since been eclipsed by The Walking Dead. Now he is back as the developer and the executive producer and showrunner of The Good Cop, the series that premiered on Netflix this past Friday, and it has a very unique matchup, Tony Danza and the popular singer Josh Groban, and it's produced right here in New York. And that's where we find our guest, joining me live from the Big Apple, Andy Breckman. Andy, great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite.
It is a pleasure, and congratulations on The Good Cop. What reaction are you getting to the show almost a week in?
Well, my sister loves it, and her neighbor has already watched the entire series. So I know that's anecdotal, but just based on those two feedback from those two people, I think we're in great shape.
What led you to take on this show? I understand that this is a format that was developed in Israel, and there are a lot of production companies and television services out there that have done some wonderful television all over the world, including a little thing called Homeland on Showtime. How did you find out about this format, The Good Cop?
Well, I was looking for a vehicle to do what I love to do, tell playful, self-contained, one-hour mystery stories, and my agent sent me some episodes of this Israeli series called The Good Cop. In some ways, it's very, very different than where we ended up. The Israeli series is a half hour, more of a workplace sitcom, really. But the there were characters in there that I just fell in love with, and I took some liberties, but I adapted my show from those characters.
Mm-hmm. And how did it end up being a story, procedural style, about someone who is off the force and yet still wants to be involved with things, despite his track record, at least perceived by other members of who we worked with in the police force, and his son, who is on the force, and is sort of, if you want to use an odd couple metaphor, is Felix to Tony Danza's Oscar.
Well, it's exactly right. It is an odd couple, certainly. I wanted to explore, you know, father-son relationship, but I also wanted to explore virtue. That's kind of the theme of the show, and how, what does it mean to be a decent person these days, a good person? And, you know, of course, Josh Groban's character is squeaky clean and buttoned down, and he maybe embraces the rules too tightly. And his father, in contrast, is struggling with how far he can go and what shortcuts, what ethical shortcuts he should or should not take. So it's the contrast between those two is where the fun lies, I think.
How did it end up that Tony Danza plays the father and Josh Groban plays the son? It's a really unique pairing in that, you know, Tony, who has literally grown up on television before our eyes in everything from Taxi and Who's the Boss to a talk show and now this, and Josh Groban, who we've come to know for years as one of the top singers of any kind of music you want.
Well, that's true. It is kind of surprising. I think that's a good thing. As I'm sure any showrunner that you talk to would tell you, casting is 98% of the job. and if you get that right, most of your work is already done. So we got very, very lucky. God gave us a big wet kiss on this project. Tony Danza was recommended by Netflix, and he was the only actor that we sent the script to and even considered. And Josh Groban is the only actor for the TJ part that we considered. He's also the only actor that read the script. So we went two for two, and that's by far the most fun of this project, is watching these two work their scenes out. You know, they're both very musical. Tony Danza, your fans and listeners may not know this, he also is a singer and has a great cabaret show. And so they're both very musical, and I think they bring that skill set to the stage. The scenes really, no pun intended, they really sing. There's a real rhythm to these scenes, and these guys find a rhythm to the dialogue, and I just love watching them work through the script together.
We're speaking with Andy Breckman. He is the creator of Monk, and currently he's the executive producer and showrunner of The Good Cop. It's the new series on Netflix, produced here in New York, pairing Tony Danza with Josh Groban. And it premiered this past Friday on smart TV sets and smart TV devices that carry Netflix. Andy joins me here in the Big Apple this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Apple with you live from New York. We're coming your way simulcast on Blog Talk Radio Speaker and also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for Andy, don't be shy. Get it in at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. This is the second of three episodes we are doing this week, and coming up on our third episode on Friday, we're going to showcase a crowdfunding campaign that could become a major way for new programs created and produced by people of color to get on the air. The project is called Keep It Colorful, and we will have the two people who are spearheading it. From Seed and Spark, the crowdfunding site, the chief executive of that venture, Emily Best, and the former co-star of the Fox long-running series Living Single, Eric Alexander, now co-owning her own production company, Color Farm Media. They will both be with us. And later in today's program, we'll check up on how the campaign, which has been on the air for a couple of weeks, how it is doing. It's right now at the point where there's about a week and a half to go, and so when we have Emily and Erica on Friday, it will be with about a whole week remaining. So stay tuned. We'll tell you how the campaign is doing later in today's hour. Andy, how soon did it take for Tony and Josh to not only develop the chemistry, but also to develop their characters?
How long? Well, as you may know, Netflix, the business model and the creative model for Netflix is different than the networks in that there's no pilot. Netflix picks up 10 episodes all at once. So normally you'd have a pilot to work on and get the kinks out during your pilot, and then you make adjustments. If you go to series, you get a chance to make adjustments. But Netflix, the model is different. They picked up all 10. So our cast had to hit the ground running. And you do see some growth. I think this is true in almost every TV series. You do see in the course of the first season, the actors finding their way and getting a feel for it and finding their voice as episodes two, three, and four progress.
How did you like working with Netflix as opposed to when you did Run for USA? And then before that, you did comedy. I believe you were a writer on Late Night with David Letterman, and you also did some other comedy programs too.
Well, I did the New York circuit. You know, I did Letterman and then Saturday Night Live. It's kind of a small little circuit in New York. I forgot your question. I'm so sorry.
I was wondering, what's it been like working with Netflix? Compared to what you did with Monk and other things? Because one thing you hear from producers, we've had a number of the show creators and producers on Netflix coming, is they give you great leeway, they let you do the show you want to do. When they give you notes, it's very few, but they're very constructive, and it's just it's like being in the candy store.
Well, I would agree with that. We had a long leash. For better or worse, the show was what we wanted to produce. It was our show. It was the show that I pitched to them. You know, I think we delivered what I pitched to them. On the other hand, the one thing that is unlike my experiences on the network is, you know, our show premiered last Friday, as you mentioned, and if it was on a network, I would have the ratings by now in my hand. Of course, on the network, you get the ratings, you know, overnight. You know how your show did. But on Netflix, they have all the information, all the data, and they don't share that with the creators, at least not with me. So that's a little that I have to get used to. That I have to get my head around.
With this program, as with Monk, it's not only a procedural and a mystery for the audience and the characters to solve, it's also a character study. The great thing about Monk was that as time went on, we got to know more about Tony Shalhoub and his character and how he had to deal with what got him to become obsessive-compulsive and deal with all those phobias, some of which he was able to conquer in the course of the 8 years of that series. With this show, The Good Cop, how do you balance the character study side of things, this relationship between this odd couple, and also having a case to solve and getting it solved before the episode's up?
Well, it's a formula that, you know, when I was writing Monk, and it's not just me, of course, I had a great writing staff. My brother was in the room. Hi, Conrad. John Collier was in the room. On Monk, we had Tom Sharpling and Joe Toplin and others. But on Monk, we kind of learned, we taught ourselves a formula that works. It's almost like learning how to cook. We found exactly the right recipe that worked for us on Monk. You start with a mystery, you start with a crime, and then you add some relationship scenes, some emotional scenes, and add some comedy. Then we found just the right mix. We taught ourselves to do it. I feel like on Monk, I went to school. I taught myself how to write these things, and I'm sure you'd agree it would be a shame if all that education went to waste. So I'm kind of applying the lessons I learned on Monk to this show, and we're using a very, very similar formula. We're starting with a crime. That's the foundation of every episode, and then we add emotional beats and relationship beats and some lighter comedy beats, and we find the right mix. It has to be aerodynamic. It has to be exactly the right mix.
What's it been like for Tony Danza to get back to the rhythm of a weekly or a television series?
Well, Tony, everyone knows Tony mainly as a comedic actor, of course, from Taxi and Who's the Boss. So I think everyone will be very surprised and very, very impressed with his acting chops. This guy goes deep, deep, deep into this character. And I loved watching him work. It was a great surprise, and I think that's one of the things that everyone is commenting to me about is just how amazing his performance is.
You know, sometimes, Annie, if there is someone who fits the term lovable, Tony fits it. From Taxi on, like every single character he's done, there is a degree of lovability in that character. You had it with Taxi, you had it with Who's the Boss, his talk show, you had it. He did a Broadway show, as a matter of fact, too. He always has this, no matter what the character is, this lovable ability, and it seems it comes across here, too, with The Good Cop, that even though he is
a funny person,
there's still that lovable, a little bit of a lovable factor.
Well, that's a quality. Of course, I agree. And by the way, that's something that you can't fake. That's not acting. I mean, that's either that's in you or it's not. And so it just comes across, and it's absolutely spot on and very sincere when you see it.
On the flip side, talk about working with Josh. This must be new territory for him, moving or expanding from just being a great singer with lots of fans all over the country and around the world to really getting, not just doing acting and not just coming to the role, but having to play opposite of Tony Danza.
Right, having to co-carry a series. Yeah, he's not just a supporting part. You're absolutely right. What I do, and I think I've heard other showrunners say this too, what I do when I'm casting, when I'm considering an actor, of course I look at their reel, but I also look at them in real life. I look at them on talk shows. I find that very revealing. And when you see Josh Groban on a talk show or a situation like that, off script, when he's just being himself, he's absolutely he's generous and sharp and quick and funny and open-hearted and very much like Tony Danza, you respond to him immediately, and that's the feeling I got when I was considering Josh Groban, and he's absolutely delivered on that promise.
And how about filming on the streets of New York? How much of it is on location? How much of it is in a studio? What's it been like day to day to be with these actors, to be with the plots, and to have it all, operate before you on the streets of New York?
I have the best job in the world. If you're asking what is it like, I this is the job I was born to do. And so I'm thrilled every day when I go to work. Our stages were in the Bronx. And we were shooting all around in all five boroughs for half the time, and half the time we were at the stages.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know it, but in the Bronx, especially in the 50s and 60s, some really great shows were produced out of those facilities, like The Phil Silver Show, Naked City, East Side, West Side, one of my favorite dramas of all time with George C. Scott. There's a great history that really would be shared more often about television production in the Bronx. And it's nice to see, by the way, that we're seeing more activity by the part of the Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment and other organizations to build up new production facilities in that borough.
Well, that's fantastic. We were very happy. As you, I'm sure, might know, there's a Silver Cup Studios in Queens, and they built a new facility. They call it Silver Cup North in the Bronx. And our show, The Good Cop, was one of the first productions in that new facility. They've only been open for a few years.
Way to go, Silver Cup. And let's hope other people do the same thing, too. We're talking to Andy Breckman. He is the executive producer and showrunner of The Good Cop. It's Netflix's new series produced here in New York, started this past Friday, co-starring Tony Danza and Josh Groban. And if the name is familiar, some time back. He's a little thing called Monk. We'll talk a little bit about that shortly. And he joins me here in the Big Apple this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from Nueva York. And if you have a question or comment for Mr. B, give us that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming right Monday, we'll have all the top executives at Hearst Television, one of the major station groups in the country. His name is Andrew Fitzgerald. He happens to be the chief digital content officer there. And they just launched a new series on Facebook Watch called Dispatches from the Middle, involving their television stations. We'll not only talk to Andrew about that series, but we'll also talk about the effort by Hearst and other station groups to start producing original programming and maybe even forming services available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Raycom Media has a service called Investigate TV, and late last week, ABC announced that their own television stations are starting a process called Localish, which will first be individual shows and then later a 24-hour programming service. So we'll talk to Andrew Fitzgerald from Hearst about that Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. I would have to think, Andy, that it was really fun on this show to reunite with one of your crewmates on Monk. I'm talking about Randy Zisk. He was one of the executive producers. He also did Bones for Fox, and he also directed the first episode.
Well, he directed actually the first and the second episode and our last episode. And he is my friend, my brother, and my partner on this. He oversees the physical production, so I can sort of just dabble with what's on the page, and it's a pretty good team that we have. It's a pretty good arrangement with that. He works a lot harder than me. I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm. And it's been 9 years since the last episode of Monk, which I mentioned in the tease, at the time was the highest rated single episode of a basic cable scripted series. Now that you can look back, what do you think made Monk work? How much of it was what you did, your creation? How much was Tony Shalhoub? How much of it was the whole production and the production values?
Well, you never know exactly why something worked. Obviously, like I said, casting is 98% of it. A lot of it is timing. I think we hit the air just at the right time. At USA was a new network. They needed us, and we became their flagship show. The Emmy Award certainly helped. The writers, I found the right writers. The writers in that writers' room on Monk, all of us were new to one-hour television. No one in that room had any experience. So I found the right – so we were learning together. And you know, it was fresh and it was fun. There was nothing quite like it out there. I think The Good Cop is a similar experience.
One of the questions about Monk I've always wanted to ask, if I had the chance to interview, and it's this. I know that when Monk came out, there was some concern from some people about having a main character, detective, who is dealing with obsessive compulsion disorder, dealing with all these phobias, how much of a stereotype it would be, or how could it be, and that there was a big fine line that would make this character believable and workable, and on the other side of the line, a caricature that would turn off a lot of people. And I'm curious how you and your writers and your crew and Tony all dealt with that. Because obviously the end result is, no, it wasn't a caricature. This was a living, breathing human being dealing with all these issues and doing it the best possible way. And it was funny, but it was also very poignant.
Well, I think if we were doing it today, people might be more sensitive. I think everyone's a little more sensitive about these issues today. At the time, we didn't, I heard very, very little negative feedback. And the only feedback I got was very positive from the mental health community. They were very pleased with the fact that, we had a character that was challenged, but he rose above those challenges and was the hero of the piece. You know, he was solving a major crime every week. So people embraced it, and I we were getting awards left and right from the OCD community, and both Tony Shalhoub and I have received hundreds of letters from people that thanked us, thanking us for helping them laugh, you know, about the, some of the challenges they have and helping them get through some tough times.
Mm-hmm. If you get a second season on The Good Cop, where do you want to take the characters? Where do you want to take the storyline?
Well, I have some ideas, but like I did with Monk, I think it would be a mistake to move things forward too quickly. I think if you move things forward incrementally, very slowly, a little, a few inches a season, I think that's a lot more satisfying. I don't want to make any, as I said, it's a job that I love, and I want to ride this pony for a while, so I don't want to make any big mistakes. So we'll come up with 10 other great mysteries and find ways to move the characters incrementally forward and have some fun while we do it.
Tony Danza and Josh Groban co-star in The Good Cop. It's available now on Netflix, and if you have a smart TV set or smart TV device, whether it's Amazon Fire, Google Chromecast, Roku, etc., chances are Netflix is where you are and available 24/7. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, Netflix.com. That's www, or just Netflix.com. The Good Cop, Tony Danza, Josh Groban, great casting crew, and produced right here in the Big Apple. Andy Breckman, the executive producer and showrunner of the program, it's been a super pleasure having you with us this first half hour. Thank you so much for everything. Congratulations again, not just on this, but also the wonderful success you had with Monk, with Tony Shalhoub and crew. And I hope that this pony you're on right now gets ridden for a very, very long time.
Well, that means a lot to me. Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure. Talk to you soon.
You got it, Eddie. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye-bye.
Andy Breckman, executive producer and showrunner of The Good Cop on Netflix, joining me live here in New York. More tomorrow will be televised, including our Classic Trivia Question of the Week coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. Did you miss Sharp Objects, one of the most acclaimed miniseries this year on HBO with Amy Adams? Well, you can relive it, whether you saw the show or not, because Gillian Flynn's best-selling book is an audiobook, and you can get it right now through Audible.com. Just go to this address and make it happen, audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from, not just audiobooks, but also original audio productions under the Audible Theater banner. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, 1 month trial of the service, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And don't forget that Audible is one of the great development partners of the annual New York Television Festival. So just check out Audible.com. And whether it's Sharp Objects or another audiobook you like, remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. It's audibletrial.com/televised. Now time for our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. We're still waiting for an answer to this question. Name the helicopter service run by T.C., Roger Mosey, the character that co-starred on the original Magnum P.I. Name the helicopter service owned by T.C., that's Roger Mosey's character, on the original Magnum P.I. If you are first with the correct answer, you'll win two DVDs, the opening episode of Season 2 of Laterville from the Audience Network, which premieres next month, and Season 1 of Love My Pitfall from Nat Geo Wild, plus the 6-DVD set of John Edwards' Developing Your Own Psychic Powers. All three prizes coming away to you if you have the correct answer. And all you have to do, email me with that answer, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full mailing address. And if you first get the correct answer, you'll win those prizes. If you just missed the question a moment ago, don't worry, I'll post it tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So play along. You never know, you could be our next winner. And no matter what, all the very best. Coming up in our next half hour, we'll check in on Stephen Sparks' groundbreaking crowdfunding campaign, Keep It Cobal. But first, we go live down under Sydney, Australia, and we will meet what some people are calling the person of the hour, the executive producer and director behind the brand-new FX critical acclaimed hit, Mr. In Between, that premiered last night. Executive producer and director Nash Egerton joins me from Sydney after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio and www.spreaker.com. Together, reaching over 30 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Blog Talk Radio is your host for the January Jones Show. It's a long-running show that shares success stories. Check out the latest episode this Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, Best of VCR is always available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum will be live on this Wednesday afternoon here in New York. 79 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our next guest, give that ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. A lot of critics around the country are talking about a program that FX premiered last night that originates from Australia. It's called Mr. In Between. It was created and it starred Scott Ryan, who plays Ray Shoesmith. He's a very unique kind of character. He's trying to do the right thing, except he also is a criminal for hire. The program has gotten rave reviews already, and some of those rave reviews suggest that in their eyes, at the eyes of some critics, that Mr. In Between may be one of the best new shows, if not the best new show, of 2018. Joining me live from Sydney, Australia, is someone who is the executive producer and director of the series. He is also, among many critics in Australia, one of the hot new directors in the world of film and television down there. It's a pleasure to welcome this program for the first time, Nash Edgerton. Nash, congratulations and welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much, Simon.
It is a pleasure to have you. What kind of reaction are you already getting nearly one day after the show's premiere on FX?
Well, it's been very positive so far, which is nice, you know. It's been a long time in the making of the show, so to finally have it out there and available for audiences to see is very satisfying.
How do you process TV critics here or anywhere in the world who see this show and just on the basis of the first episode, they're already saying, this is the best new show of the year. And we still have 3 months to go. But, like, it must be something special for critics, for you to hear that somebody out there, a respected critic, says, this is the best show of the year, anywhere.
Well, it's very surreal, you know, like I, you know, I'm very proud of the work everyone did on the show, and you know, and I've been a fan of Scott, who created the show for a long time, and you know, to have that vindicated in that way is really great.
Let's get right into it. I understand that this was an independently made movie before it became a series. Give me the road in which A, Scott put this program together, got it on FX, and got you involved as not just executive producer, but directing all the episodes.
Well, I met Scott in 2004. He'd made I saw a short film called The Magician at this short film festival in Melbourne, called the St. Kilda Film Festival. And it was a half-hour sort of fake documentary about a hitman named Ray Shoesmith. And Scott wrote, directed, and starred in that short film. And, you know, I saw it, and I loved it, and I came up to him. I saw him in the foyer in the cinema afterwards and said how much I loved the film and could I get a copy of it, because I thought my brother Joel would really enjoy it as well, and I wanted him to see it. And Scott handed me this DVD and said, well, it's actually a feature film, and I've been trying to get interest in it for the last, you know, year or so. And so I took this DVD back to Sydney, and with my brother and a few friends, we watched this film that he'd made. And it was about a 90-minute version of what I'd seen the a few nights before at this film festival. And, so I called him the next day and said how much I loved this film. And, you know, he told me he'd been sending it to distributors and trying to get interest in it and wasn't getting any return calls. Now, Scott had made this film just with his friends and a video camera for around $3,000 and didn't know anyone in the film industry and you know, was just cold sending it to distributors and wasn't getting any response. And he said, look, if you – and I said, look, I'll call distributors that I know and I'll encourage them to watch the film. And he said, well, if you do that, I'll make you a producer on the film. And I said, well, look, to be honest, if you're going to put my name on it, I think it needs to be re-edited. Because as much as the execution of the film was great, and especially the half-hour version, the 90-minute version wasn't very well edited. And my feeling was people, if they had even picked it up, had watched the first 10 minutes of it, It wasn't very well edited. It's shot on mini DV and super lo-fi, and they turned it off. And I, because I'd seen a great half-hour version, I watched the whole thing and could see the potential in the film. And so I said, yeah, I would help him, you know, re-edit the film, and I wanted to see everything that he'd shot. And so I set about doing that with him, and so I essentially recut the film and then started to show distributors, and along with Michelle Bennett, who is also our producer on Mr. In Between, we raised some money. And Michelle had produced this film Chopper with Eric Banner, which was Andrew Dominik's first film, and so together we raised some money and got the film finished, and we got a local distributor, and it got released in cinemas here in Australia and also in the UK, and it also played the Sydney Film Festival and Melbourne Film Festival, and was really well received critically, especially for Scott's performance. But it wasn't, it was a super low budget movie, and so it had a bit of a cult following, but didn't really set box office on fire. And around that time, after the film came out, Scott started talking to me about he was going to write a further extension of this character in a TV series, which I thought was a great idea because I really loved that character. And so we started developing this TV series. And, we got to a certain point, and the television station we were developing it with sort of let it go. And I tried a number of other places over the last, 12 or so years, 14 years. And, I almost got the show up a number of times, but no one would let me cast him in it. And they said they loved the scripts, they liked me as a director, but what about this actor? They were looking for a known actor. And that was a deal breaker for me. I was like, I'm not making this without Scott starring in the show. And so I just kept holding out until someone would let me make it with him. And I think it just took the time of, my status as a director to rise for someone to trust me, and just the extension of other avenues for TV. Also at the time, over 10 years ago, we were saying we wanted to make a half-hour drama, and no one was making a half-hour drama then. And so I think it just took this time before, what we wanted to make fell into place.
And now all of a sudden you have this series, FX takes the show, and I understand Foxtel, which is the production company in Australia, joins them in making this. Show goes on the air. And even before the show goes on the air, FX says, let's do a second season, and let's give you writers to work with to further develop the character.
So we've started developing a second season, but currently, same as the first season, Scott's going to, write them all, and I'm going to direct them all.
What's it like, Nash, to be joined at the hip with a talent like Scott, where both of you have visions about this character in this series? Scott certainly does, playing him and directing the original feature film. And you come, and you being the director, it's like your joy. What is it like to be have that kind of relationship?
Well, look, I think when you both believe in something, and I think we both have a very similar sense of humor and an understanding of what, I had an understanding of what what Scott's vision for the character and the show was, and you just determined to, have the show become what you want it to become. Over a long period of time, I was going off and doing other things in the meantime, and as I'd meet people that I thought would be interested in the show, I would tell them. But, and it was hard because I would let Scott know anytime I'd get some interest in it, but, we'd been rejected quite a lot, so it's a long process, but I think when you believe in something, you stick at it.
You are hearing live from Sydney, Australia, Nash Edgerton. He's the executive producer and director of the new critically acclaimed FX series, Mr. In Between, that premiered just last night on that network. The next episode of the program, they had two episodes presented last night. The next episode will be next Tuesday at a special time, 11:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Nash joins us live from Sydney, down under. This half hour on tomorrow will be televised. Final half hour with you live from New York. 79 degrees at the top of this hour. If a question or comment for Nash, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find our homepage, blogsofree.com/televised. Second three episodes we are doing this week. Third one is on Friday at the very same hour. And joining us will be the folks behind a very important new crowdfunding campaign called Keep It Folkful. The idea, get as many pilots created by, produced by, featuring people of color, get them funded, and maybe ultimately get them into a series. My guest will be the chief executive of Season Spark, the crowdfunding side involved, Emily Betts, and the former co-star of the long-running Fox series Living Single, Eric Alexander, now co-owner of her own production company, Color Farm Media. They're both involved in the Make This campaign, and coming up before we leave the air, we'll check in on how the campaign is doing. It started a couple of weeks ago. Emily Betts and Eric Alexander from Keep It Colorful, and that's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific right here, on tomorrow will be televised. Nash, talk about how you expand, how you and Scott expand this series from the film. You have this basic character of Ray, who is trying to be sort of skirt the line, if you will. He's this criminal for hire, but he also wants to do great in the world. He wants to be great as a father, he wants to be great as a person, and so forth. What's it like to have this character done to the camera?
Well, when Scott made the film originally, he had all these ideas of things he wanted to do, but, because he was making it with, the limited funds he had access to himself, and as I said, it was made for $3,000, there was only so much he could do. And, so there was ideas he had of things the character and situations the character could get in, but he just couldn't afford to do them. And so having, the chance to actually make the show with a bit more time and a bit more money, not that we had a lot of money, but we definitely had more than $3,000. We had the opportunity to put the character in various situations and surround him with other characters in his world and life. So that was kind of, the great thing about making the TV series is, we really got to expand on his world. And, Scott was very clear on what, in his world and the characters he wrote around the main character of Ray were really well drawn.
How gritty or what is the tone of the series as you capture it on camera?
Well, I think it's very, it's very straight it's a very dark comedy. The situations are played very real. The humor comes out of the situations. I think he and I both have a very dark sense of humor. And so the tone sits in that place. There's as much as the show is very funny, there's no real jokes in the show. Like there's a tension, and because of, certain situations, there's a lot of humor in those situations.
Mm-hmm. What kind of situations does he get involved with?
He's got this best friend in the show, Gary, who's a bit of a gun dealer, and Gary's got this Russian mail order bride, and Gary just seems to get himself in situations. He's a bit of a messed up individual, and Ray is constantly trying to bail him out of situations or help him out. And so there's a lot of humor in their relationship, and Ray also has an 8-year-old daughter who extorts his friends for money for swearing and. But the show treads this fine line between his life, his work life as a criminal for hire, and then him looking after his 8-year-old daughter and dealing with his ex-wife, and he's met a girl at the dog park that he started to date, and it's just like bouncing back and forth between both sides of his life that, you know, some people know about, you know, there's very few people know about both sides of his life, and so he's in between both of them. It's him like balancing both sides of that.
How does the series expand what you do as a director? You've had some very interesting experiences as a director for both film and television. I understand that you did a film that actually the late Roger Ebert, a film critic who shot it sometimes, TV personality, really liked it. Yours called The Square. And some people may have seen a film that was presented by Amazon on smart TV sets and smart devices. I think it was about a year ago called Gringo, which you did with some really super talent, people like Charlize Theron, David Oyelowo, Amanda Seyfried. I mean, that's, you know, top-of-the-line super actors.
Yeah, well, look, you know, this is my first time ever doing some television, and because of it, I essentially, when I shot the show, and because I was shooting all the episodes, I shot it like it was a movie. It wasn't until I was editing it that I had to, that it really felt like a different process to me, where I'm cutting it into, you know, half-hour episodes. But, you know, I think the storytelling, in the process of making it felt the same as making a movie to me. You know, I had all these characters and this story, and I was making it like that. So it didn't feel that different until I got into putting it into the episodic, into the separate episodes, you know. But one thing that was really great was being able to, you know, explore this character with more time than I would have had on a film.
The next episode of Mr. In Between, the acclaimed new series on FX that premiered last night, will be next Tuesday night, 11:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. That comes right after the latest episode of Mayans MC. That's the Son of Anarchy spinoff that started a few weeks ago on FX. We've got the executive producer and director of the series, Nash Erickson. He's joining us live from Sydney, Australia, where the show is produced. He's with us live this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. A few more minutes with him, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, just pick up the phone, dial the number, and get your voice going. It's 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Finally, on Tomorrow We Televise, a top broadcast station group executive, Hearst Television Vice President Ann Fitzgerald, will join us. We'll talk about some of these interesting things that he and his organization are doing with his stations around the country in the area of digital programming, especially shows you can get and maybe services on smart TV sets and smart devices. They just launched a brand new series on Facebook Watch called Dispatches from the Middle. It involves the local TV stations with some very interesting stories that they have gathered from all across the country. And we'll also get his thoughts about a growing movement by various TV station groups, including ABC's own stations, Raycom and others, to actually create new programming services you can only get on smart TV sets and smart TV devices like Amazon Fire TV, Roku, and Google Chromecast. Hearst TV's Anna Fitzgerald, live with us Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Now that you know, Nash, that you and Scott and everyone involved in Mr. Machine have a second season their way, what kind of preparation are you doing for it, and how do both you and Scott want to expand the character and the storylines?
Yeah, well, so the second season is in development. We haven't been greenlit yet, but, you know, we have hopefully a good opportunity that's going to happen. When we started the first season, we had ideas of furthering the character at that point, but we only had, enough money to make 6 episodes. So, you know, we've already sort of developed storylines of where we want to take it and further certain characters in his life, like his brother and his relationship with his brother and, his relationship that he starts in the first season. So we have, a solid, list of things we'd like to accomplish with the show, and which we're we're feeling good about.
Mm-hmm. And before I let you go, Nash, how do you and Scott see the whole idea of redemption in this series? Because the character comes across as somebody who really does want to achieve something in society, whether it's for his daughter, whether for society at large, and yet he just constantly, because of characters like the Gunrunner, who's sort of like, we would call him a loose cannon here in the United States, that's a little term for my neck of the woods, that he constantly gets pulled back in to this life of crime or being this criminal for hire in order to raise the money that he can live and be redemption.
Well, look, I think the appeal to me of the show and where, the idea for it came from for Scott is that, it's exploring, this guy who has quite a strong moral code and his, his moral center is probably a little left of center of everyone else. And then what he does for a living is his job. And he, it's not like he's trying to get out of the life of what he's doing. It literally, he treats it like it's his job. And that's what the interest, I think, in the show is to people is, it's this guy, he's a low-end criminal for hire. And you're really getting a sense of how he navigates his life, with his personal relationships while doing that for a job and really keeping that, trying to keep that life separate to him. And I think what will start to bleed in season two, and you get a sense of it by the end of the first season, is those lines start to blur a little more, and that'll get tougher for him to navigate.
Mr. In-Between, starring Scott Ryan and directed by Nash Edgerton, is now playing on FX. And if you want to see why the critics are raving about this show, not just here but other places too, check it out next Tuesday at a special time, 11:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on FX. It's 11:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on FX, following the latest episode of Mayans MC, the Son of Anarchy spinoff. Check out always for FX available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the promo online, here's where you go, www.fxnetworks.com. That's www.fxnetworks.com. And I'm sure that if you want to catch the two episodes that were presented last night, I'm sure FX will have them replayed later on in this week and on the weekend. Once again, episode 3 of Mr. In Between, 3 of 6, that's Tuesday night, 11:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on FX. Available all over the country on cable and satellite. Nash Edgerton, the executive producer and director of Mr. In-Between. Thank you again for joining us, taking the time for what has to be like, Thursday morning your time down on Australia for being with us. Congratulations to you and Scott and everybody for the rave reviews here, and hopefully this is the beginning of a wonderful long run for this program.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us, and hopefully people check out the show.
I'm sure they will, Ned. A delight all the way to have you on. Take care. All the greatest.
Thank you.
Nash Edgerton, executive producer and director of Mr. In Between on FX, joining us live from Sydney, Australia. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have our third of our three programs this week, and we kick it off with a look at a very exciting crowdfunding campaign that could become a major breakthrough for people of color creating, writing, and producing programs. The project is called Keep It Colorful, and already for the last few weeks, about 50 individual scripted and unscripted TV series pilots have been on Seed and Sparks crowdfunding website to get funds. We wanted to do it before we ended things up today, give you a progress report on that, how that is doing. Well, of those 50 or so projects, 3 have already gotten funded, with over 100% of their goal met. The whole idea of the campaign is you have to meet your goal of getting crowdfunded, whatever that goal is. They'll have money that you wanted the public to donate. As I said, 3 of the shows have already received funding, so they're all set to go. 9 more shows now have between, as of a couple of hours ago, 60 to 95% of their goal met. And by the way, if you meet the goal, you get the funds. If you don't, you don't. But at least one of those series is going, one of those series possibilities is going to be developed by Black and Sexy Television, which I believe is a programming service available on smart TV sets and devices, and by Color Farm Media. It's a production company co-owned by the co-star of the long-running Fox comedy series Living Single, Erica Alexander. So once again on Friday, Emily Betts, who is the chief executive of Seed and Spark, and Erica Alexander from Color Farm Media will join us to talk about Keep It Colorful. So once again, of the 50 or so projects that are currently available on SeedandSpark.com that you can fund, 3 of them are now fully funded. with their pilot, and 9 have between 60 to 95% of their goal raised. We will keep you posted when we have both Emily and Erica on Friday. We'll have another private report on how they're doing. The campaign has about 9 days to go. If you want more details about the campaign, you want to make a donation to any one of the pilots that are up for funding, go to StephenSpark.com, www.StephenSpark.com. This has been a wonderful hour, and again, I want to thank Nash Edison for waking up early tomorrow morning, his time in the studio should be with us, the executive producer and director of Mystery in Between on FX. And again, thank you to Andy Breckman, the executive producer and showrunner of The Good Cop, now in its first season on Netflix. And again, if you want to check up on that show, Netflix.com. The show is produced here in New York, and it's gotten some wonderful reviews so far for the performances and the plots involving Tony Danza and Josh Groban. It really is sort of a unique odd couple, New York style, for our generation. And we'll see how both Mystery in Between and Good Cops go in terms of a long run. Again, coming on Friday, Emily Best and Eric Alexander from the new Steven Spark crowdfunding campaign, Keep It Colorful. I personally hope this will be an every year deal to really expand where diversity can go on television. And coming up on Monday's episode, we'll have Hearst Television Vice President Anna Fitzgerald. We'll talk about the new series his organization is doing on Facebook Watch, and we'll get his thoughts about the growing number of TV station groups that are now, as we speak, developing original programming services available to you on smart TV sets and devices. If you came in late on today's program, or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, we hope you do, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. So far, more than 10,000 replays so far this month. We thank all of you for that. Keep the replays coming. Tell your friends to do the same. You can also check out our replays in podcast form at iTunes.com, Apple TV, and Spreaker's own podcast apps, and of course on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you go to iHeartRadio.com, all you have to do is put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click that bar, and you get our episodes right then and there. So no matter how you check out our replays, we thank you for doing so, and please tell some friends to tune us in. And if you're checking us out on replay right now, join us live, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And remember, you can also check us out on Facebook and on Twitter. You can email me with your thoughts about the program anytime you like at SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Whatever you do to communicate with us, it's always appreciated because, as we like to say around here, what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate at BTR is Candace Williams. Andy Toast, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sullenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of Blog Talk Radio are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, an Amazon company and proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook and 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your midweek. We'll catch you back here Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're doing from now until then, please make it safe and make it great. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.